Great to have you with us on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio, and welcome to another edition of Garden Talk. Hi, I'm Larry Mueller. Great to have you along today. I first wanted to say a big thanks to the gang at the University of Wisconsin Waukesha. We had a wonderful time there and met some wonderful people and had a couple of great discussions. One of them had to do with sustainable living, and we spent a part of that time talking about food as being sustainable with food. And of course, gardens and garden talk came into the conversation pretty quickly. And I know it would have if Barb Larson had been there too. Barb's with me now. She's UW Extension horticulture educator for Kenosha County. And we'll talk a little bit about sustainability, I think, as we deal with our vegetable garden and maybe with the flower garden, too. She has a wealth of information to share. I hope you'll join in. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page. Go to the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page. You can post your questions or your comments or your garden photos. I love to see that, too, as well. Barb, welcome back.
I'm delighted to be here again. It's great.
Oh, yeah, it's wonderful. This time of the year is always great. I'm a little, I don't know, envious in a way, because I see my neighbors on both sides have gotten their flower garden area all
all cleaned up.
All cleaned up. And here's Larry still looking at his unclean.
Well, you know, unless you had a lot of disease or insect problems, it's nice to do a little cleanup or at least cut those perennials off and let them drop and help self-mulch and decompose and help the soil. But if you don't get to it, most of the time it's not a huge problem.
It just sort of goes away after a while.
Yeah, it disappears. Yeah, I was out last weekend and doing cleanup, and my husband and I were out in a couple of hours, and we got back in, and I went, oh, I didn't stretch well enough beforehand.
That's one thing we ought to be doing, out there.
Yeah, it's after that winter, even if you think you're active, it's not quite the same as gardening. So, and I find the little bit older I get, the harder it is to do that, too. So just remind everybody that first few times, make sure you stretch and get yourself in shape and all those kinds of things.
And so, you mentioned to me tetanus shots, boosters, and if you haven't had that.
Yeah, and I think that's something, we're working in the soil all the time, and as adults, a lot of times, I think we forget that we should have tetanus boosters periodically. So it's not real often. Check with your physician, but if you can't remember the last time you had it, chances are you probably
need a booster.
Yeah.
And so that's your health report.
Yeah,
for the
that's
day.
Right. That's right.
Now we can talk about gardening
that's
here.
Right.
And there's so much to talk about. Robert in Holcomb, I think it's Holcomb. Let's see. Robert, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Are you in Holcomb?
Yes.
All right, good.
It's about 100 miles straight east of Minneapolis, St. Paul, about 50 miles north of Eau Claire.
I know exactly where it is. Yeah, I know exactly where it is.
Well, a lot of water here.
Yeah, there's a lot of water everywhere across Wisconsin. We got a lot of rain the last couple of days.
We did get a lot of rain last couple of days. That's going to slow us down.
We had snow last night.
You had snow last night? Okay, yeah.
Yes. My question is on straw bale gardening, and I've heard you talk about it on this program. I can't tell you how many times. You've got me interested in trying it.
Okay?
So, right now I've got 4 bales. That's what I'm going to start with this year. Just
okay.
4 bales.
All right. Now, where are they?
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm going to let Larry handle this because he's got more experience than
I do with
straw bale gardening.
They're outside getting wet.
That's good. That's good. You want them to be outside getting wet.
Yeah, because you want them to start decomposing.
Yeah.
Well, I guess that's one of my questions is what can I use on them? I've heard different things. Some people say use bone meal. Some say blood meal. Some say fertilizer. Some just say use compost.
It kind of depends on what you're going to grow in the straw bales. For me, most of the time, I'm not going to do onions or carrots. But if we're going to do something like that, you really do need to have some soil
yeah.
on the top.
Well, and I would think compost is certainly important because it carries a lot of those bacteria and fungi that help the decomposition process. And for most of the time, you're also going to have to add a lot of nitrogen fertilizer because straw is basically all carbon. And so you need that nitrogen to help break down that carbon, get those microorganisms working to help break it down there in the center so that you have something to plant in.
And I usually start, you know, it's good to have your bales ready and sort of in position. And then like a couple of weeks before I'm going to be planting is when I'm heavily using a hose on the bales and watering those, wetting those down. And I'll throw some fertilizer in there, too, the heavier nitrogen. And that kind of helps. That kind of helps the breakdown, too. Mm-hmm. You know, things start breaking down a little faster.
Is there a suggested fertilizer that works better than something else?
I put a granular fertilizer down in there, and it's a higher nitrogen.
Yeah. Yeah, that would be the one thing you do want to look for, those where that nitrogen, that first number, is a little bit higher. So, you know, you could use something like 10, 10, 10, 20, 20, 20 or something similar, but most of the time you want something that's pretty high in nitrogen. That first number, you know, 30, 40, 45, something like that. I was just talking to somebody this past week, and they said they just used regular urea fertilizer, like a farm fertilizer, to it, which is all nitrogen.
Yeah, it's all nitrogen.
Yeah, so. And then obviously, then you have to wait a couple of days. Don't plant immediately in that, but that's really gets that breaking down.
Well, that just kind of gets started seasoning these things. I mean, you know, we're a little early, but, you know, if you got fresh bales,
longer
to get them to work.
If you're not fresh, it's going to take a couple of weeks regardless. So you're just going to have to be watering those bales, and you're going to be able to start. You're going to get a head start on what you'd be able to plant normally.
Because they're above the ground, so they're going to warm up a little bit.
And they're going to be warm. You stick your hand down in there after a week and a half or so, you're going to feel, oh, wow, it's warm in there.
Yeah, but
and where I've got them, I get a lot of sun. I get sun from early in the morning till late in the afternoon.
That's perfect.
Yep.
Perfect.
Sounds good.
So from that standpoint.
Yeah.
Now, follow up.
Yep.
And you talked about putting soil on top, okay, either compost, maybe potting soil or something, you know,
if you're going to plant something, if you're going to use seeds.
Correct.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, example, say I use potatoes. They tell me potatoes grow really good in straw bales.
They do.
Yeah.
How many plants can I put in there? And can I plant, like, radishes on the top?
Probably. Because you're going to be cutting those seed potatoes up and sticking them down probably as far down into the bale as you can go, like at least halfway down.
Yeah, and I'm thinking, what, 3, maybe 4? Yeah, I was going to say, have you grown potatoes in it? This I haven't done this. Well, I'm looking at Larry here.
No, I have friends who have, and it's great.
Oh, okay.
Well, they've had really good success with the potatoes, and of course, they're clean.
Right.
But I think you could probably get the radishes done before the potatoes by a log site. So.
And there's no question that would work, the radishes, because you'll be pulling those out early.
Yeah, that's for sure.
And I was thinking three plants in a bale.
That sounds about right to me, too.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. Yep.
You know, I'm only guessing.
Yeah, well,
that's a good guessing.
You know, that's part of the fun of gardening is we guess, and if we're wrong, then we go, no, next year to do it a little differently.
That's exactly right. I was talking before, mentioned on the show that one of the bales right next to the backyard, to the back door, where I come in from the car, and right there is where I've got my cherry tomatoes. So I can just grab those, a handful of those on my way in and out of the house every time.
Healthy snack. That sounds good.
There you go, Robert. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. I want to give Sean and Randolph a chance to join us. Sean, hi. Thanks for calling.
Well, hello. Thank you so much for taking my call. I am calling. It's a gardening question, kind of.
Okay.
This time of year, a lot of people have received beautiful tulips, Easter lilies, hyacinths from either birthdays or the Easter holiday. when would be a good time and what would be the process to take those and then be able to transplant the bulbs into my yard? So
okay.
I get them next year without necessarily the free gift, and then I just get it another new gift.
Sure. So I have done this. Some of these won't reforce some of the tulips and other and daffodils and things. Aren't really happy being once they've been forced coming back in a kind of normal pattern, but I've had it work sometimes and sometimes I haven't, so it's definitely worth the try. The important thing is to make sure you build up that bulb, so you want to keep it watered, you want to in the pot. Go ahead and you may even want to fertilize it, and you want to keep it in a nice sunny location. Keep it growing as long as possible and let it die back on its own. Then when it dies back, what I've always done is then knock them out of the pot, knock most of the potting soil off of them, threw them in a paper bag and stored them just in, you know, a basement or some cool dark area. And then planted them in the ground in fall, in September or October. And it's the times that seems to work fairly well.
Okay.
So I would suggest doing something along those lines. I have had people with Easter lilies where they'll plant those outside after it gets warm enough. And then, you know, so put them directly in the ground.
Sure.
When is it warm enough? What's the consistency?
50 degrees?
Yeah, I would wait or wait until that soil warms up a little bit so that everything's kind of growing. I would say, well, let's see, Randolph, I would think early May maybe.
Okay, thank you so much.
Uh-huh.
Thanks a lot for calling. Jane in Okano, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi. I wanted to let everyone know that there's going to be a workshop on April 18th put on by Sustain Jefferson. This is the green organization for Jefferson County, Wisconsin, and it's going to be on container gardening.
Oh, wonderful.
Oh, good.
Yeah, so just search for Sustain Jefferson, and it'll tell you the exact time and place on a week from Saturday, April 18th, on container gardening.
Oh, perfect. That's wonderful.
That's one way to get started, everybody. In fact, I'm going to be at the Burlington Garden Center tomorrow talking about pollinators. They have a big event. So, yeah, if you're feeling antsy and it's rainy or too wet, which it definitely is a lot of places after the rain we've had the last few days, a lot of garden centers and also many organizations are doing gardening events. So go out and see those. So.
And Jane, what's the event again, with the title that we go to?
Sustain Jefferson.
Okay, we'll try and put that up on our Facebook page.
Thank you so much.
Yep, Cheyenne's got it written down. She'll get it up there. Cheyenne Lentz, our on-air producer today.
Sustain Jefferson. And we were just talking about sustaining sustainable movements. That's great.
That's wonderful. Nancy in Whitewater, your turn. Thanks for calling.
Hi, thank you for accepting my call. I would. We just moved into a house. It's on 3 acres, and we. I would like to put in some peonies and some coral bells, and I didn't. I was thinking that I could buy them from Menards because it's kind of on sale. So I was thinking, could I put them in now, or should I wait a little while?
So the important thing is you don't want to dig in the soil if it's too wet, because okay. Digging in the soil when it's really wet actually destroys the soil structure, and you'll have a harder time growing. So once
and your soil is wet, I would just about bet for sure
yeah.
If it's whitewater.
Yes, whitewater is definitely wet. Everything is wet. So wait until when you get into wherever you want to plant them, that bed, and you pick up a handful of soil. If you squeeze it together, it doesn't stay in a, you know, in a really wet, compacted
ball.
Kind of ball or clump.
Okay.
When you can just kind of, you know, move your fingers and it kind of falls apart fairly easily, but it isn't too dry, then it's okay to plant in it.
Mm-hmm.
And if you want, and you want to take a, you know, get the bargain now, you can go ahead and purchase container plants, and then just keep them in a sunny location and keep them moist, and they mm-hmm. should be fine until the soil dries out enough to plant them.
There you go. Good luck, Nancy. Thank you very much for calling. And you can join in, too. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Talking today with Barb Larson, horticulture educator for UW Extension in Kenosha County. I'm Larry Mueller for Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up next week on Garden Talk, we'll hear from Lisa Johnson. She's the UW Extension horticulture educator for Dane County. She'll be happy to answer your gardening questions next week on Garden Talk. Right now, happy to have Barb Larson with us, Barb, UW Extension horticulture educator for Kenosha County, and lots of callers online. So let's go back to the phones, and Alex in Neillsville. Thanks for calling, Alex. What's on your mind?
Yeah, hi. We're transitioning to a no-till vegetable garden, and I'd like to incorporate some perennial plants and vegetables.
Okay, great.
And I'm wondering if you have any experience with doing that or any advice on how to actually incorporate those.
So the important thing with perennials is to make sure that you put them, well, you're doing no-till, but you're still going to be in there kind of disturbing things with your annual vegetables. So you want to put them either off to a side or on an end so that they're not going to be disturbed as much. You're not going to have to worry about the root system of them. But it works great. A lot of people, I mean, we have a few perennial vegetables, things like the asparagus and things that mm-hmm. that people frequently put at the end of their, you know, kind of traditional vegetable garden without any problem. The other thing is look at height. So what perennials are you thinking about?
Well, like you said, asparagus in terms of perennial vegetables.
Okay.
We actually have strawberries and some blueberry and honeyberry bushes in there now.
Okay.
But also things like perennial herbs. Maybe some sage bushes and things of that nature.
Oh. Sure, sure. So, yeah, make sure that they have their spot. The taller ones you want to put on the north side so that they don't shade the shorter things. The perennial herbs, and I certainly grow perennial herbs too, be a little careful. Some of those can be aggressive, like some of the mints and other things. Well, or put it in a container and then, yeah. or something, or in its own very, very separate. So do a little bit of research so that you know what some of those herbs and things are going to do. But you should be fine.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So in general, it seems like you can't really plant annuals around perennials. They almost need their own separate space.
You mean in and among them?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think you're better off.
It'll be just a pain in the butt for you is what it'll amount to. So you're better off to kind of have them separate.
Right. And when you get in and you want to plant them, now you're disturbing the root system of the others. And they're all close enough. If what you're thinking about is, you know, are the herbs going to draw more pollinators? They're all so close, it's not going to make any difference.
And you know what? Okay. One thing you didn't mention, but you ought to somewhere at the end put a clump of rhubarb.
Oh, yep. True.
Yep.
Yeah. I definitely am. At least I would.
Say anyway. Larry likes rhubarb.
There you go, Alex. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. Jack in Milwaukee, it is your turn. Hi, Jack.
Hi. I have a question about helping mason bees propagate. We have a small plastic greenhouse, and my strawberries are already blooming.
Wow.
Good.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's good, but I'm afraid that there's nothing much there to pollinate them, and I'm afraid I'll have to go around and
do it yourself.
Slip off for the flowers and wait, you know.
Yeah, you could look. I've seen some bumblebees out.
Oh, you have? Well, mm-hmm. We've been kind of cool and wet, so we haven't seen too much flying around except for a few houseflies.
Yeah, yeah. You're a little farther north than I am.
Yeah. But we had seen stuff about mason bees, and some people say that you take like a soup can and you roll up newspaper around pencils and put it in the can, and the mason bees will, you know, lay their eggs in there, and then you just, you know, put them out, you know.
The ones I've seen for mason bee and mason bee houses and those kinds of things, you do have to have the right size, and most of the time they're like a wooden tube or a bamboo or something like that. So you may want to look a little farther online. We do have a fact sheet from the UW Extension Horticulture page. There's a little bit in there. I'm not sure if it talks about mason bee houses, but it does talk about attracting some of the native pollinators and making things a little better for the honeybees and some of those kinds of things.
Right.
But there are some other really good sources, the Xerxes Society and other ones that have information about that.
Right.
So we thought about
buying, a bumblebee hive, but you can't just buy one hive, it seems. You have to buy, a pallet of hives.
Yeah.
That's way over. And we looked at the Milwaukee Waukesha has a honeybee society.
Yeah.
Very, very friendly people. We went there, the wife and I did, and talked to people there. But it seems that honeybees are a little bit more work than I imagined.
Yeah, they are. Yeah. We have a great one in Kenosha and Racine, beekeepers group too. So, but I think where the way you're thinking to begin with, where you want to encourage the bumblebees, the native bumblebees, the native mason bees, the native orchard bees, and there's a lot of good information online, but
yeah.
Kind of check your resources there.
I think you can, the mason bees, I was trying to remember a block of wood and a drill.
Drill, yeah.
And a drill bit and just drilling holes in the block of wood and then somehow positioning that block of wood.
Yeah, I think so. But you have to, and I can't remember off the top of my head. I don't remember. Those are those things I have to look up. But there is a specific size that you have to have those holes. They're very finicky about
specific.
That. Yeah.
But there is a drill bit that will work.
Yep.
So it's something to look online and actually it might even be in that extension publication.
It may, or there's some other really good resources out there. As I mentioned, there are a couple of really good either university or major kind of organizational sites like Xerxes that does that.
Good luck, Jack. Thanks a lot for calling. I want to give Tim a chance to join us. Tim, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi, hopefully a couple quick and easy questions for you. I want to have a herb garden that is, one that I can put outside or bring inside during the winter. And I'm looking for herbs and spices that will basically grow year-round so I can always, just take little clippings when I need to. A lot of Italian cooking in my house. And then I have a lawn that has some dead patches. And I'd like to overseed it. And my thought was to overseed it with something that I'm going to love the smell of versus grass. And I was thinking maybe of doing basil or something else that might give a nice smell. And who knows, maybe I'll go out there and clip off a little bit of the lawn and eat it, too.
There you go.
Okay. Well, I wouldn't do basil for the lawn since it's an annual. But you could do things like thymes, and there's lemon thyme, and there's regular thyme, and all sorts of different ones. It's lower growing than a standard lawn, but that would be a possibility. And thyme is quite often used in around pavers and as a ground cover and some of those kinds of things. So it would even take, because it's low, it would take the mowing. I'm even wondering if you could do, because they spread so quickly, things like some of the different chives and things, the garlic chives and the onion type chives. And all of those would grow really well in pots. You can move them in and out. I've certainly grown those both places. Basil, if you grow that outdoors, if you try to do it in, it doesn't do quite as well as an indoor plant, so you'd have to start over maybe in the fall with it. I would look for more of the perennial herbs for ones that you want to move in and out in pots. Let's see, the other ones, we were talking about the mints and make sure you keep those in containers. But those would definitely grow in pots without any problem.
Yeah.
So those would work. Let's see. An awful lot of them. Rosemary is often grown in a container, especially in Wisconsin, because it's not cold hardy here. So that can be moved in and out. So I think you have a wide variety of choices.
Yep. There you go, Tim. Thanks for calling. Dean in Northern Illinois, your turn. Hi, Dean. Thanks for calling.
Well, hello, Larry. I have a question regarding milkweed. I had a bunch of it in the fall. I cut it down, saved it. It was outside. I was wondering if I can still plant those seeds for the monarch butterfly.
I would think so. I would have to double check. I don't know, because you had them inside.
No, seeds? I had them outside all winter.
Oh, you had the seeds outside. Good. Then it should be okay. My concern would be, you know, a lot of our native plants have to go through that cold, moist period, which is winter, which is also it's called stratification. So double check some sources, but if they were outside, I would think you could go ahead and plant them. They should come up.
Yep. Thanks a lot for calling. Bob and Krivitz, your turn. Hi, Bob.
Good morning. First of all, I really appreciate your show. Anytime I'm up at my cabin, I'm retired, and I listen to you every day.
Oh, thanks.
But, talking about container plants, now this is an open container on the bottom, but I had a very good friend. I passed away about 18 years ago, and he was a farmer, and I think him and his wife could grow a plant on concrete. I mean, there was, you know, everything they touched through. Okay, so he asked me one time if I ever heard of planting potatoes in a tire. And I said, no, I never have. He said, well, I'm going to try it this year. So he bought, Chinnebeck potatoes?
Chinnebeck.
Yeah, okay. He laid a tire down, a tire that was no good anymore from one of his hay wagons, and he laid it down, and he took some of the fertile topsoil from in his barnyard, okay, and he planted one potato plant in each one of these sets of tires. He did two of them. Okay, and as the potato plant came up, even with the tire laying flat on the ground, he would let it get about an inch and a half high, lay another tire there, and put more soil over it.
Yeah.
He did that on he got up four tires, and he had potatoes all the way down.
Mm-hmm. I've seen it done. I was working with a community garden last year, and that's how they were growing their potatoes.
That was amazing. I never, you know, just knowing him, I knew if he said it's going to work, you know, he wasn't a real educated person. Super self-educated man. I thought, I said to my wife, this can't possibly work. Got old, and by gosh, it did. I went down there and helped them dig the potatoes out.
Yep.
They were all the way up.
Yeah, we have a lot of people growing potatoes in boxes and containers and barrels and...
And bales.
And bales.
Okay, so every time you bury that top of that potato plant, like his were about an inch and a half, what I can remember. They'd get up about that high, and then he'd put another tire on there and more dirt. Will that just continue doing that?
Yeah, it will. I mean, it'll reach a point where, you want to kind of have those potatoes mature in size, so I wouldn't go forever on it.
Four tires.
Yeah.
The last two tires, the potatoes weren't as large as the bottom ones.
Yeah, that's right.
Yep.
So part of it depends on the kind of potatoes and the size you want.
Yep. Thanks a lot for calling. And I think there's even on YouTube, there's a couple of videos of people that have done that.
I'm sure.
And then you can just take the tires apart if you want to. Just pull them apart one at a time and... Pull them off. And
I guess that's recycling, right?
Yeah, you bet. And we have open lines. If you have a question or a comment or maybe an experience to share with our guest today, Barb Larson, we'd love to hear from you. Call us at 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org. Or you can post on our Facebook page, at the Larry Mueller Show. We'd certainly love to hear from you. Now let's go to Paul in Plymouth, Wisconsin next. Hi, Paul. Thank you for calling.
Well, thanks for being there, Larry. Garden Talk's the best show on radio.
Thank you.
I have an asparagus bed. I live on the north side of the second highest hill in Sheboygan County, and I have a tiered garden, and the asparagus bed is about 3 feet wide by about 25 feet long, and I've had moss growing on top of the asparagus bed for quite a few years now.
Mm-hmm.
And I get a fair crop. I get plenty. We're happy with what it is, but I'm wondering if I should try to eliminate the moss or let it go as is and just continue feeding, top dressing the asparagus bed there.
I think most of the time the reason you have moss is because you have moist soil in shade.
And on the north side of the hill,
yep.
And it's in the garden tiers, there's a stone wall. It's about 18 inches high on the south side of that bed. So that does provide a little bit of shade, but...
Yeah. And there's, you know, there's not that much you can do, especially when you're dealing with a bed of perennial plants. If it wasn't perennial plants, I would tell you to, you know, work it up, work some compost, and increase your drainage in it, try to get a little more light in it. You know, if we're talking about a lawn or something like that. But in this case, I don't think there's too much you can do about it. And as long as you're still getting okay production, you're satisfied with that, I think you're fine. I wouldn't, it's not worth the time and effort to scrape it off, and it's just going to come back.
Yep.
And you're probably like, yeah.
Places where I have tried to scratch it off, it has come back. So.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It comes back.
And if you wait too long, you're going to damage the tips of that asparagus, and you don't want to do that.
Don't want to do that.
Mm-mm.
You're right.
No. The only way you're going to resolve that problem is to cut down the tree or at least clear the branches out.
Well, in this case, though, it's just the north-facing hill, so I don't think there's any choice. You can't even do that.
No.
You can't even do that.
No.
So
I think
the hill out.
That's not going to work. Paul, thanks for calling. Appreciate it. Good advice from Barb Larson here. Let's go to Steve in Baraboo. Hi, Steve.
Hi. How are you guys?
Great. Good. Appreciate the call. What's on your mind?
Well, I have a question about Brussels sprouts. For many years, we grew Brussels sprouts. They were totally successful. Everything was fine. And the last two or three years, with no other changes to the garden, we've had Brussels sprouts grow up. They look good, but the Brussels sprouts never get beyond about half an inch. And I'm talking about taking them all the way through into the fall, into a frost. They just never get big. They sort of hang.
Okay.
Ever heard this happen?
No, but I will admit that vegetables aren't. I do a lot of vegetable answer questions and things, but that's not. That's one I'd probably have to look up. But let's do some general kind of maybe figuring out. So. The first thing I always ask when people are having trouble and they've grown things for years and it's been fine is, are you rotating your crop? Are you moving this to different parts of the garden? Or are you basically growing it in the same area?
No, they're being moved around.
Okay, yeah. And you're not planting at the same place that you've done other coal crops?
Correct.
Okay, all right. Are you using have you tried different cultivars, different varieties?
Well, that is the one variable that I can't say we've controlled.
Okay.
Because, of course, it's a matter of getting them in the spring, and it's, the strange part is that it's unlikely that they're the same cultivar, only because it's not like we buy them from exactly the same place at exactly the same time every year. So the chances of it being identical are pretty slim.
But you're not
but
tracking.
That could be.
Yeah, but you haven't tracked the cultivar. And quite often, if you're purchasing transplants, a lot of times there's not a lot of variation in purchase transplants. So you tend to see Jade Cross a lot or some of the others. So that might be a possibility. Otherwise, this is one off the top of my head. I don't know. I'd have to do some research on it, Steve.
Jade Cross, though, that may be one to look for, though.
Yeah, well, that's a long-term one. I mean, that's been around for years and years and years.
I know. It's got a good track record.
Yeah, it has a good track record. So I would try those things, but as I said, you can also, if you want, email me and I'll do some research.
Yeah. Yep.
Okay.
And Barb's information is up on our Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show. If you need to get that, you can just go there and click on Barb, and there she'll be. And boy, I love Brussels sprouts. Good Brussels sprouts. Man, they're just, a lot of people don't like them, but I sure do. Dwight in Duluth, Minnesota, thanks for calling. Hi.
Hi. See, I'm first time doing the straw bale, and I've got some bales sitting outside, and I'm wondering, for up here in Duluth, when should I put some fertilizer on top of it, and how much do you put on? I've got some, you know, just granulated, looks like white beads of fertilizer, and just do you just layer some on top of it, or?
That's what I do. That's what I do. I layer some on top, and I put the hose to it a bit.
And I would say wait till the you don't have any snow sitting on top of it, and then give it, you know, go ahead and get it going. I mean, Larry was talking about it early. Get it started. It's going to take a while.
Okay, start watering and fertilizing right now, then.
Well,
you're going to be able to put some things in for sure.
That far north, you don't want it frozen. So wait until the bale defrosts and then start.
Yeah, they're not frozen at all.
Oh, they're not.
Frozen.
Okay. All right.
Okay, so one more question. How are they for doing tomato plants?
Well, that's my favorite. I use tomato plants. Four or five tomato plants in my straw bales.
Yeah,
and always does well. Not in each bale. No.
Probably
depends on the size of the bale, but two or three maybe.
Yeah.
Three is the max.
Regular size bales.
Two or three at the max. But you can also grow stuff out. You can also grow things out the side. So if you want to, I don't know, put pumpkins or zucchini or something out the side, you can just punch holes in the side and plant them out.
Yeah,
that
plant
way.
It that, then. So there's lots of ways you can do it. Think about the size and the number of plants and how much root space you're going to have in there, too.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Great. All right. Thank you so much.
Yep. Thanks a lot for calling. And it's not going to be the only time you put some fertilizer down.
You need to
be adding a little bit as you go along.
And that's what we were talking about. That, you know, the idea of the straw bale is if you don't get this decomposing, you got it going. Otherwise, straw is pretty. There's nothing there for the plants to grow in. There's not many nutrients. There's not much going on. So unless it's really starting to decompose and rot out, and you know, you look and it's kind of it looks, I don't know whether dirt likes right, but composty kind of looking. Mm-hmm. It's not going to work. So go ahead and start.
Yeah. Lynn and Eau Claire, thanks for. And there is, I should mention, there's a really good book on straw bale gardening, and it's not too expensive. Oh, what's the title? I'm sure we have it up on our Facebook page, and it might be just titled Straw Bale Gardening. I can't remember now. I have it sitting on my desk, and I can't think of the exact title. But
haven't you even interviewed the author?
More than once.
Yeah.
Yes, actually several times. And he's a very good interview. And the book itself is great photos and very good information. So it's one of those, I don't always recommend every book that I read, but that one I certainly, if you want to do straw bale gardening, I think that's well worth a look.
Mm-hmm.
For sure. And let's turn, where are we here? Where are we at? Lynn and Eau Claire, your turn.
Good morning, Larry. Regarding the caller who talked about his getting rid of the grass in his front yard.
Yeah.
My husband and I put in three tiny little one-inch pots of creeping thyme years ago.
Uh-huh.
And like the twice a year that we have to mow, or even walking across it, it smells like you've walked into a pizzeria. it's kind of the pro-con thing. It draws a lot of bees because of little beautiful purple flowers, but you wear shoes.
Oh.
And the book is Straw Bale Gardens by Joel Karsten.
There we go.
Yeah.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
And thanks for the pros and cons on the time and the lawn, too.
Yeah, that's great. Thanks,
wonderful.
Lynn. Yeah, thank you so much for calling. You're wonderful. Thank you so much. And thank you all for listening. Gosh, we got lots more things to talk about here. Open lines for you at 800-642-1234. I'm Larry Mueller with Barb Larson, our guest today. Cheyenne Lentz, our on-air producer for Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Thank you so much for listening in on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here, this edition of Garden Talk. Our guest, Barb Larson, horticulture educator for UW Extension in Kenosha County. Edward in Hartford has a comment. Let's go there. Hi, thank you for calling, Edward.
Good morning. I'd like to tell your listeners how to grow tomatoes organically like they've never tasted before in their whole life.
Okay.
What you do is you dig a hole about a foot deep for each plant. And about the size of a dinner plate around, and you put in the bottom of that hole some compost, which you've been saving for from the previous year, whatever compost you have. What I used to do is I had an old metal garbage can mm-hmm. that the bottom rusted out of, so I partially buried it in one corner of my garden, and I filled that with a layer of garbage scraps, table scraps, layer of dirt, table scraps, layer of dirt, another table scraps, until it was full in the fall. So that worked all over winter time, and then by springtime it was ready to put in the bottom of each one of these holes. And then you also take some animal waste. It doesn't make any difference what kind, especially, but it should be about a year old. You put some of that in, and then because our soil in Wisconsin, at least, is deficient of calcium, you sprinkle some bone meal in there, and then you take a garden trowel and you make a depression in that mixture for the plant. You set the plant down in that hole, and then you partially cover it. Oh, by the way, you put in, I mentioned bone meal, because that helps to attract worms, too. So then you partially cover that, and then about a week and a half or 3 weeks later, you take your mulch and you spread your mulch around your garden, but you still have a depression by each plant for watering, which is great. You're not watering the weeds.
And there you go. What do you think, Barb?
I think that sounds great. You always want to make sure that you've got compost is a great addition. There is one caution, and that is the animal waste or manure. Don't use dog, cat, rabbits. Okay, you know, those kinds of things. But mm-hmm. there are some animals that we have to be cautious about. You don't want to use that. So
and certainly a year old is a good as Edward said. Mm-hmm. And you're probably going to wind up with some pretty good tomatoes.
I would think so.
Yeah, Edward, thank you. Thanks very much for calling. Boy, I tell you what, I'm starting to think about those tomatoes. Oh, man.
You're getting hungry already, huh? We got a few months yet.
All those good tomatoes that we grow here in the state? Oh.
Uh-huh. Yep.
I'm ready. I'm a little early, but
yeah,
I'm ready.
I think we're going to get the things like the peas and other things first. They're also really good.
I like the peas, too. Jerry and Rhinelander, thanks a lot for calling. Hi.
Hi there. Hey, thanks. Larry, you're the tomato lover. Try those chocolate cherries if you have not.
Oh, yes. Ah. I have heard about them, and I haven't tried them, so I'm going to... That might be worth a try this year.
The first bite, they taste like chocolate. I mean, as soon as you take that bite, it's just because they're so sweet and such. But, yeah, they're great. I do the seminars for straw bale gardening for Joel Carson.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I just wanted to give a few of the things for the fertilizing, since there's been a couple of questions on there today, if I may.
Sure, go ahead.
Great, thanks.
That it takes about 10 days if you're doing regular fertilizer. And on that first day, you're using a quarter cup of a fertilizer that does not have slow release in it. So a quarter cup, water it in really well. The second day, just water it. The third day, another quarter cup, water it in. The fourth day, you just water the bale. The fifth day, another quarter cup. So it's 3 days skipping it at a quarter mm-hmm. cup of mm-hmm. fertilizer. And then you use for 6, 7, and 8, you're using an eighth of a cup every day of fertilizer, watering it in. And then on the very last day of the ninth day, you're using another eighth cup of 10-10-10.
Okay.
And after about 5 or 6 days, that bale should be somewhere around 120, 130 degrees inside. And it's ready to plant as soon as it's just barely warm to your hand temperature. So it should be 80, 90 degrees in about 10 days.
Yeah.
Okay.
That is basically, you know, I should have used a cup, I guess, but I was doing it by my hand feel, you know, more or less.
That's
a handful.
Close.
Well, that looks close. All right, I'll put that in.
Well, and we don't mention what we've been talking about is potatoes and tomatoes and how great they grow in there. Well, guess what? You've got that nice, warm environment for those roots, and that's what those plants like. So that's probably another big advantage of doing it that way.
Yeah, absolutely. Ron, thank you very much.
Thanks a lot.
For calling. Appreciate your call. And let's turn to Darren in Madison. You know, I don't know why I didn't have the book right here with me so that I could remember all those facts and figures, but I just couldn't do it off the top of my head. Darren in Madison, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi there. I just had a question about getting a new garden started. We recently moved out to Oregon, South Madison, and we're looking to start our garden this year. And I want to plan to shade out and kill off grass in the area and then do some planting. So I have two questions. One, what is the easiest and best way you would recommend to till off the grass, and how much tilling, you know, do we really need to do? It's really great soil. It's an old drained wetland. Unfortunately, it's drained. And then the second thing is what can we start from seed yet if we were to just, you know, get it going either in the house or plopping it in the ground once we get the grass out of the picture. And I used to chop off the top, you know, 2 inches of sod when doing these projects with new houses, and I'm done doing that. So I wonder what you would recommend.
Well, that's usually how I do it, but I know that's really hard work to do it. So it depends on what your philosophy is on these things. If you don't want to use any kind of herbicides, then what you would do is, and you don't want to strip the sod off, then you could cover it. A lot of people will that layered. We've talked about straw bale, but back a few years ago, the lasagna gardening kinds of things where you use layers of newspapers and or some people use cardboard or any of those kinds of things and get that and then put compost and things over the top and get that decomposing to help kill that grass. You actually are eliminating the light and everything, and eventually that decomposes. If you just go in and kind of till it up, if you could do that and then kind of rake out as much of the grass plants as you can, but you are going to leave pieces of grass plants and weeds and everything, and that's going to come back up probably.
So if I shaded it out like starting this weekend, then I would use burlap coffee bean sacks and just layer it on top. How long do I need to leave it covered until the grass is going to be dead enough that we could plant without using herbicides?
It's going to be quite a while. So many times when people do those methods, they put enough compost or other things so that they kind of cut and plant through a little bit. So as it's decomposing, you're planting through it, because it's going to take probably a couple of months for it to really smother that, and then you're still going to have some. This is not like a quickie, I'm going to kill it in a week or two.
Yeah. Okay, well, assuming we get that taken care of, what can we do for planting things from seed at this time of year just south of Madison?
Well, we're just getting into things like peas and those kinds of things that you can direct plant into the garden. As I was driving up here today, I was thinking, I wonder if I'm going to get a question about what can I still start from seed and grow transplants. So, There, it would have to be fairly quick or short. I would look, though. Sometimes tomatoes and things, peppers have that, a 6 week from seed to transplant size. So look at some of the ones that have, just go to the garden center and or check on the internet on the seed companies and see what that length of time is. Between doing your seed starting and getting that transplant ready, because even in the southern part of the state, most of the time we're not going to be wanting to put in tomatoes and
definitely
peppers and things until mid-May to late May. I think things like cucumbers and squash and pumpkins, those are probably, you could all start those from seed indoors too.
Okay.
So I would look at that.
I'm still looking. It's still almost 2 months.
Yeah.
Or a month and
yeah.
A, at least
I think
a
you've got.
Month.
Okay. Yeah. Even in the southern part of the state, we always get kind of surprises, you know.
Sure. Yeah.
Okay. Great. Thanks.
All right.
Okay.
Thanks very much for calling. Appreciate your call. And, there's always so many different things that we can talk about. Pruning. Gosh, I know we could talk about pruning. There's some things we shouldn't be pruning anymore now on our oaks, probably.
Yeah, we're late for oaks, so I would hold off and wait until fall.
Yeah, that's definitely in late fall.
Late fall, yes, like November.
Like November. That, you're not going to want to start any earlier than that. And certainly there are some other things that you will be able to prune. Talking today with Barb Larson. Barb is the horticulture educator for UW Extension in Kenosha County. Our guest here for Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks so much for joining us today on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this edition of Garden Talk. We are visiting with Barb Larson, Barb, UW Extension horticulture educator for Kenosha County. Always great to have her along. And certainly great to have you listening in. If you have questions for her or maybe an experience to share, we always love that as well. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. And certainly if you've got a question or comment or even a photo, garden photo, we'd love to see that as well. You can post that on our Facebook page. Ron in Sauk City up next. Ron, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hello.
Hi. Appreciate your call.
Oh, thank you. As far as the straw bales go, I have a two-season plan for them. Actually, it's an infinity plan. But what I do is I cook them down and plant basically flowers. It's on the corner of my garden where I like to have some color.
Yep. Okay.
And I go grow flowers and stuff in them the first year. And then I break them down. I usually throw in a potato or two also, a few other food crops. Mm-hmm. I break them down at the end of the year and harvest whatever is coming out of them. And then
whoops, we lost him.
We lost Ron. It sounds like he's got a two-year plan for it. So he breaks the bales down. I don't know what happened here. He's gone. We lost him.
Oh, no.
We lost him for sure. So he breaks the bales down, and then it sounds like he plants again in those same bales.
Yeah, well, and we were talking about that during the break, that, mm-hmm. We were talking about breaking them down, using them a second year. Or I was talking about even using that as a great mulch in your garden.
Oh, wonderful mulch for the garden.
Yeah, so I think there's lots of different ways you can either reuse it or reuse or recycle, I guess.
Yeah, and I'm sorry we lost you. It just sort of like cut just like that. So I will give somebody else a chance to join in. Here's the number to call, 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. We'd certainly love to hear from you. We were talking about pruning a little bit earlier, and is this a good time to do some pruning?
It is. It's actually my favorite time of year to prune. So I do almost all of my shrubs and trees and all those kinds of things. especially, well, even in the southern part of the state, it's still, we can do the fruit trees now, as long as they're not started to bud out. However, a little caution, since we've had so much rain and humidity, when it's the humidity is high and it's rainy, not a good time to prune, because as our friend Dr. Brian Huddleston would tell us, you know, that's when we spread diseases. So kind of keep an eye on it. The best time to prune are those nice, sunny, dry days when you really want to get in the garden, but maybe the soil's too wet or it's a little bit early. That's cleanup and pruning time.
Kathy, and by the way, the water, I mean, we were 3 inches, southern Wisconsin was about 3 inches low.
Yeah.
Behind, but we did a little catching up in the last few days, for sure.
Yeah, we did, because, yeah. So, which is good. So.
Yeah, absolutely. Kathy in Green Bay, thanks for calling.
Yes, I have a question on pruning, which is very timely. Mm-hmm. I have 2 very large hibiscus plants, which are old from my mom, and I prune them every year and put them back in pots on the patio. Is this a good time? They get real leggy in the winter, and,
yep.
And is this a good time now to prune them back and maybe fertilize and get them ready for going outside?
Sure, and often those plants that have spent the winter indoors, once we get into this time of year, kind of mid to late spring, is the perfect time to do pruning. As you already know, make sure you prune them back to a side bud or a branch and watch the shaping on them. And, they're getting ready to go into a real period of active growth. And so this is perfect. Great time.
All right. And then do I give them a little indoor plant fertilizer also at that same time?
You could, but you might want to wait until you get ready to move them outdoors, because you want to kind of match to the amount of light they're getting. I'm assuming, maybe incorrectly, that you have periodically fertilized them during the wintertime.
Not since January.
Okay.
I kind of let them go in the winter.
You kind of let them go semi-dormant. Yeah.
Right.
Once you get ready to kind of move them out and get them, kick them back into active growth, then you could use a fertilizer on them.
All right. Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Thanks a lot for calling. And let's turn to Jackie in Milwaukee next. Hi, Jackie.
Larry, how are you doing?
Great. Appreciate the call. What are you up to today, Jackie?
Well, I have 3 rose bushes, beautiful yellow ones that were new. When I planted them for the winter, I was told to put them, I surrounded them with wire.
Okay.
Filled the wire with leaves.
Mm-hmm.
And put a plastic bag over the top. Now, the bags have blown away. When do I start uncovering those rose bushes?
Now.
Yeah. Probably a good thing the bags blew away.
Yeah,
too.
Yeah, the bag. You didn't see. Larry got to see me grimace when I heard the plastic bags, because that just keeps it really chance of moist and, yeah, not good. Start uncovering them now. We may have some cold nights, but not cold enough to damage those roses. And you, by uncovering them, you aren't going to have them budding out a little bit too early. So go ahead and start carefully uncovering them. That should be fine.
Thanks so much.
Okay.
Thanks, Jackie. Good to hear your voice again. Jackie calls every once in a while and always has a good question.
Good.
Lee in Green Bay. Hi, thank you for calling.
Yeah, hi. I just have a quick question. I'd like to ask, I have about a dump truck-sized pile of really nice black soil. It's been there for about 6 years because they were doing some construction work around here.
Okay.
By being piled like that, does that do anything negatively to, like, the micronutrients in that soil, you know, because it's piled all up?
No, it won't make any difference. The problem with the, you know, construction piles or leftover piles of soil like that, it doesn't have anything to do with nutrient levels. It has to do with when you move that soil, it destroys or can destroy the soil structure in there. So, you know, the soil particles can clump together, and that's how it improves air and water between those soil particles. So that's why whenever you have pulverized soil or anything like that, or even that's been sitting there for a while, or areas with new construction, things tend to not grow as well. It has to do with the soil structure, not the nutrient levels.
Mm-hmm.
So not a simple, quick answer, but when you get ready to use it, make sure you work in organic matter, and that'll help it.
Okay.
Yep. Thanks a lot for calling. And Jane in Appleton, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi. I just had a question on, we have a fairly large black walnut grove that impacts a flower garden I have. Can you put straw bales in that area and grow that way?
Sure.
Sure. It's just like it would be like growing things in a container.
Okay.
Just make sure you don't have walnuts and, get buried in the squirrels bury stuff in there.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Okay, good.
Okay.
And that's actually one of the advantages.
Yeah.
If you've got a black walnut tree, it doesn't matter with the straw bale because
right.
you're not going to, the tree's not going to affect it unless the squirrels get after it.
And it's not going to be there long enough, like with some of the raised beds, roots will end up in the raised beds and then you have problems.
But that's not going to be the case with the straw bale. Well, you can call in, too, 1-800-642-1234. Actually, Bill wondered, this back to straw bales again. He said, hay bales, not straw bales, isn't it? But no, it's straw bales.
Mm-hmm.
And I imagine you could use hay bales. Hay bales would be a lot more expensive.
Well, and they have, how much seed do they have in
it? Yeah, that's the problem.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of seed.
Yep.
And that brings up something we haven't talked about, and that's weedy.
Yeah, so wherever you get your bales, make sure you ask them very carefully. You know, you want weed-free straw, and once you find a good source for weed-free straw, go back there. Because otherwise you lose that one of the advantages, which is not having weeds. So it's just like when we talk about using straw, talked about using straw as a mulch in an in-ground vegetable garden or a raised bed vegetable garden for years, but we always talk about make sure it's weed-free.
Yeah, absolutely. We have lots of callers on coming up online here. Our guest today, Barb Larson, horticulture educator, for UW Extension in Kenosha County. Great to have her along. And again, thank you for listening in. Andre in Marshfield up next. Hi, thank you for calling.
Oh, hello, Larry. That was really quick.
Yeah, glad to have you on.
So I have a question. I tuned in when there was a caller asking about how to prepare the patch. He didn't want to take off the top inches of topsoil.
Yeah.
Yep.
So what I have done in the past, it really does take a long time. So I normally do that in the fall in advance of the spring.
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But to kill the grass, I've always used, I don't like to use any pesticides, herbicides, or any poisons, but I've always used vinegar, just like straight up solution of vinegar, sprayer and spray the grass, and it kills it indiscriminate, a weed killer. It kills everything in its path.
So vinegar out of the bottle is not I know a lot of people use it, but it's not an approved herbicide. It's actually what kills is the acetic acid in it. There are herbicidal vinegars, and they are actually much higher concentrations of acetic acid. If you do choose to use something like that, be very careful. Like anything else, you need to read the label and follow the directions very closely. Andre did mention that they kill anything. Yes, they kill the tops of anything. Acetic acid is what's called a burn down type of herbicide, meaning it kills only what it touches, the top part. It will not kill the root system. So sometimes you have to continue killing back in order to get rid of things.
Yeah, before the roots, the nutrients that are in the roots get used up.
Yeah, otherwise it'll keep resprouting on you.
Yeah. So Not one that we recommend, although, as you say, there is...
If it's a labeled product as an herbicidal vinegar or an herbicidal acetic, and there are products... It depends on what else is in it. So you may find some organic formulations of it, but you may also find some that aren't just kind of a certified organic. So don't always assume just because it's
vinegar.
You can get it out from under your kitchen cabinet that it's safer or that it's organic, because that's not always true.
There you go, Andre. Thank you very much. Mike and Racine, your turn. Hi, Mike.
Hi. I just wanted to follow up on the straw bale and black walnut trees. Mm-hmm. Is that, I did raised beds, or attempted raised beds is probably the right term, where I put down landscape fabric down below so that I wouldn't get the roots coming up and all that. And the problem that it turned out I ended up having with my walnut trees is I was outside drip line, but within the downwind blowing distance of, and if anybody's owned black walnut trees, they know they aspirate like a sticky liquid, and that will blow downwind and get on the soil from the top down. And so it just, if she's going to do straw bales, I would recommend that she make sure that she's well away from the drip line and preferably from the prevailing winds, be upwind if possible.
Okay. A lot of people think that if you're outside of the drip line, you don't have to worry about tree roots, but tree roots actually extend 3 to 5 times the height of the tree. So you are going to have that. I think this is kind of a funny story, so hopefully the rest of you will think it is too. Talked to a guy a few years ago. And he had done raised beds also because of the problems with the walnut trees. And so he told me that he was having a lot of problems in his raised beds because he was finding walnuts buried in them. And he said, well, he thinks it's probably fair that the squirrels were burying walnuts in there because he was throwing the walnuts at the squirrels to get rid of them. So he thought that was the squirrels' revenge by planting them in there.
Oh,
so,
man. Well, I have not heard about the air problem.
I haven't either. I'm wondering if you are downwind, you could certainly get in, like many trees, walnuts, their flowers are they're a wind-borne pollen. Mm-hmm. I've also certainly seen the flowers, the male flowers that would get blown in. So it's possible that that's what's getting in there. Or it could be that those darn squirrels are getting in there too, or something else. The other I'm not so sure about.
Sean and Eau Claire up next. Sean, hi. Thank you for calling.
I'm having problems with tomatoes and peppers and cucumbers. It seems like about when they start maturing or getting ripe, they'll get like a white spot with a black spot on them, and they just start rotting. I was just wondering what that would be and how to prevent it.
And it must be on the fruits that you're getting those?
Yeah.
And is it on the bottom of the fruits, or is it all kind of smaller spots all over the fruit?
Kind of smaller spots on some of them, and sometimes the spots can be anywhere, on the side or anything.
Okay. Well, it sounds like one of the fungal diseases, and it may not, the tomatoes and peppers, it may be the same disease, but the cucumbers are probably not the same one. Do you rotate? Do you move your plants around so don't plant?
We've tried everything.
Okay. Have you taken, you're in Eau Claire, have you taken some samples into the Eau Claire County Extension Office and asked the horticulture educator there, Aaron, about it?
No, we haven't.
If it shows up again this year, I would definitely go in and talk with Aaron and see if, have her identify what's going on for you.
Because she might be able to have some, would definitely have some suggestions.
Yeah. The other is, if you don't, I also suggest you mulch So that you, a lot of those things are rain splashed back up on the fruit. So I would do that to help prevent rain splash. Make sure you have good space between the plants to help keep them dry. And water at the bottom, at the soil level. Try not to use too much overhead watering, which all
Oh,
yeah, because that leaves, the leaves are wet and the fruits are wet, and they're much more apt to get diseases.
And like most people, you plant the tomatoes too close together.
Yeah, I think I've done that, too.
Yeah. It all adds up to not a good tally.
Yeah. So you want to try to keep those leaves and fruits dry.
I've been told it was blight, and I've sprayed them with the blight stuff, and that just never done anything for them. So
yeah, first of all, don't use sprays until you know for sure what the problem is, so that if you do choose to use it, that you're using the right thing. And before you spray, try these kind of cultural kinds of things, how you're growing them and that stuff, to try to reduce the problem or get rid of it.
Yeah, there you go.
Okay.
Thanks a lot, Sean.
Thanks for calling.
Cheryl in Verona. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I heard earlier the comment about putting your perennial vegetables at the edge of your garden. Well, I expanded my garden last year, so now my asparagus bed is in the middle. So would it be better to wait until I harvest a crop this spring, or just go ahead and move them to that outside edge, north-facing edge?
Oh, transplant them?
Yeah, I wouldn't. Yeah. Well, if you transplant them in spring, you've lost your crop for a couple of years.
Right.
So
wait till after I harvest
them. I guess you could, but you're still going to... So I guess there's a couple of things I would look at. Is one, even if they're in the middle of the bed, is it going to cause a problem? If it's not, if you can, you know, if it's in the middle, plant on each side and kind of stay away from it. As long as they don't shade out your vegetables on the one side, it should be okay. Mm-hmm. We were talking about, you know, he's starting a new one. So, the other would be, I guess if it was me and I wanted to really start again or move them, I'd just start with new ones in that other spot and let them grow for a couple of years, and 2 or 3 years, until I get them big enough to be able to harvest off of them, and then worry about the older ones.
That's a great idea. I'll do that. Thanks so much.
Okay.
All right. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Well, we've got about a minute or a minute and a half to go here. Barb, any last minute comments here?
This is my favorite time of year because I walk out in my yard and everything is starting to green up, and I look around and the flowers are beautiful, the trees are leafed out, and the dogs haven't dug any holes, all those kinds of things. So this is a great time of year to plan and get started and be excited about gardening and try something new. Mm-hmm. Whether it's a vegetable or a flower or a fruit or something like that, and also grow some of those favorites.
Maybe I'm going to try those chocolate cherry tomatoes.
Interesting, but I have a feeling I like chocolate so well that nothing is going to taste like real chocolate, I don't think. So, but I might still like them.
Barb, it's always a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
She'll be back. We'll have her on again. Barb Larson, UW Extension Horticulture Educator for Kenosha County. Always great to have her along, and she'll be back. We'll visit with her again. Monday on the program, we're going to be visiting with UW-Madison chemistry professor Bassam Shakashiri. He's going to be talking about a distinguished chemistry alum who recently passed away and his legacy, and also the triumphs and failures of the Wisconsin idea, which we get a few of both. Then at 11:45, we'll learn about the National Health Care Decisions Day and why it's so important for all of us to be thinking about. In the meantime, thank you so much for listening, and please stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.